December?
September 17th here at the Overton office. Brother Dale is going to lead us in the pledge today.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is there any public comment here or in a remote location?
Doesn't look like in remote, pretty empty.
Okay, that's good. Looking for a motion for acceptance of the agenda.
I move we accept the agenda as presented.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Approval of the minutes of our previous meeting. Becky sent those out a week ago or so on August 20th. Looking for a minute for approval.
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes of the previous meeting on the August 20th meeting.
Very good. We have a motion. We have a second. Who was the second?
Me.
Mike. Very good. Okay. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We got a couple of thank you notes from kids on the scholarship. I think both of them are from Mesquite. Well, I don't know, Lindsay Marshall? Anyone?
They were both delivered to Mesquite office.
Mesquite, okay. And I'm sure Kim D. Cowley. Cowley's from Mesquite. Anyway, they're there if you're interested in reading them. We have our attorney here with us. We have our attorney report.
I don't have anything at this time until a little early, unless there's a questions for me.
Okay. Very good. Well, we're to the manager reports then.
Wonderful. Let's do safety first, so we'll kick it off with Kyle.
All righty. For the month of September safety meetings, we had plural since last time we visited as a board meeting. August 28th was the first one. We had 55 attendees. That event, we ended up having ESCI had some scheduling conflicts, so they opted out of being there, but we chose to hold a safety meeting ourselves in-house still. It was honestly an incredible meeting. It was something to be proud of. For the topics that day, we covered the safety OPD5 safety manual, which our team will speak to you here shortly on, and then Melissa delivered a good follow-up from our strategic plan that we just recently had with the board. Gave a lot of updates to the entire staff. And then I was able to put together a presentation, and it just mostly covered a lot of the previous topics we'd covered through safety meeting, ladder safety, fire extinguishers. Kind of just gave a little quiz to the employees as a group. It was I was very proud of it. It was an incredible meeting, I felt like. For September, we had 53 attendees, and the topics were sexual harassment, workplace violence, drugs and alcohol training. And if you can tell on that picture on the right there, we invited Chad Levitt to come in and give an excellent safety devotional that morning, which I'd say he delivered on. It was well received. We learned a lot of powerful words from Chad, and it was just great to have someone from the community, not only a board member, but someone from the community to speak to the team from that safety aspect, from where they come from in the construction past to where they are now. So,
very good.
We have tasked the safety committee and us to keep looking for future speakers in the future, so hide if you don't want that role. For department training for the month of August, Zach Barton delivered outage communication scenarios to the line department's team. Basically kind of best practices for when the customers call in, the line department gets that call, you know, near the beginning of it, and how do you handle that? What are the first steps for that? So it was
a lot of scenarios that Zach had put together previously that we discussed as a team and had a good discussion there. Layton followed up with out in the pole yard out here. We did a shoring up trenches. We've been working on that quite heavily, which I think I've delivered to you just recently. But the best practices, what we've learned, but also what in the field we're finding to use our tools and our shoring pieces, what works best. September 11th, which was just last Thursday, I invited in Nevada Highway Patrol to come and give a refresher to all our commercial drivers. We invited a lot of other the drivers that might be hauling equipment, but he just went over all the different aspects of an inspection, tying down, what safety aspects they're looking for as far as patrolmen out on the field, and this was a great training overall that we had good attendance for.
Kyle, you were able to review the overlay permits and the requirements of that during that session?
Yeah, he spoke on it briefly, but yes, he didn't understand that we had them up front, so our team, I didn't let him know, but our team was able to speak up and know those points of what those overlay permits and what they cover. Yes, did a good job. Yep. Outage report for the month of August. We had 9 planned outages and 1 unplanned outage. Very minor month, if you ask me, and nothing much to note. The 1 unplanned outage was a transformer got hit early morning before over there in the Pulte Homes area. No driver to be found, nobody was there, but the customers, when they woke up, they called it in to us, so pretty minimal.
Car was gone too?
Car was gone, yeah, of course. And of course, the cameras didn't capture anything, you know. it's odd sometimes how that works out. Service installations for the month of August. We had 4 commercial and 42 residential. Dinosaur Sub, which is Pulte, had a lot, 31. They continue to have most. Canyon Crest, which is up towards the dump over there, Mesquite, with 7. And then, commercial, we had the 4 Mesquite and Pultsford, carried both of those. Service installations for the annual total, it's surprising to me. The year started off so slow, but as I look at it and I figure out an average to finish out the year, we're going to be, as long as it's a tailor off, we're going to be head and shoulders above what we did last year, so doing really well. Jobs for Mesquite for the last month. They've been continuing working on, and you probably, if you've driven downtown recently, seen all the traffic and that. They're doing that underground facilities upgrade through there. Our team, that is mostly covered by a contractor, but our team has also been working down there. They install these vaults down through there, and there's a few of these that they have to get the conduit and wire ran into it before the paving project, because the conduits are out in the road. You can see here the 2 red marks and the ditch right there in line with it. That's where the conduits are on those. So they had to get those cut into that new vault before the paving project starts next month. So that's taken up all of their time in Mesquite. It's been very busy. I have 5 different vaults throughout the area that they're very complex and doing a very good job at it. Overton's had many smaller scale jobs. To note the bigger ones of them, the Sunrock, they went through and did a redo here in over there in Bunkerville. The Overton team was tasked with that, while the Mesquite stayed focused on those vault moves we just talked about. Dick O'Dell, the butcher up the road, we did an upgrade there. He moved his panel and just upgraded his service. Logandale Ball Fields, they're expanding the ball fields up in Logandale, so our team has done a high voltage extension and new hookup. And then this picture on the right here is the OBD pole changes, which is from the Overton Wash heading down towards Simplot. Older poles, rotten poles, just doing maintenance, keeping up on those pole changes. Any other questions or thoughts? That's all I have for you.
Was you going to talk about the whole helicopter deal up there, the pole trucks? And is that your baby wick or what?
As I was leaving town that day, I noticed the NV Energy boys out in the field there. I immediately called their cousin to see what's going on out there, and we invited ourselves to go see, to watch them do that, but it wasn't anything to do with Overton Power.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they were practicing helicopter access training. They get strapped into that rope dangling from the bottom.
I could not believe when they flew those guys out over the fields,
yeah,
hanging onto that rope.
Yeah.
Is that what they were doing?
It's pretty, pretty interesting, yeah. I don't know that it would ever fit a role here. Let's long ways down the road, I believe.
Rescue off of pole top.
Yep.
And I relayed to Kyle that you tell your crew that we give a warm welcome to NV Energy, but we let them know that there are warnings that happen when they exit the freeway and enter our valley, and we're aware when they're in our territory. So. Oh,
that's cool.
Thank you. Oh, it's engineering. Okay.
Okay, the long drive switchyard and Raptor substation, we received all the steel that's been delivered. The contract will start erecting that steel next week, and we're still on schedule to be completed by the end of the year. First slide is Tortoise to Gila, and we're on schedule. I don't know, it's hard not to drive down the freeway going to Mesquite and look at those poles and just enjoy the scenery, right? See those poles, they look magnificent out there. And they're so straight, they're such, they're, the elevation looks good, the profile looks good. It's just a beautiful sight. This is pole around 140. We're drilled out to 108 to 100, and we're moving backwards. So Gila substation is 245. When we talk about pole numbering, it's 245 at the end, so we're working backwards right now.
Would you go up the mesa, like towards Riverside down there? Were you going from the top of the mesa clear to the bottom?
It's like, yeah, most, yeah, it's a good span, yeah.
And you're replacing three poles for every one of these, it looks like.
We're replacing a lot of, this is all new build here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is all in our new line. But when we go to rebuild the existing ones, they're like, we'll probably go to a mono structure and replace two poles with one pole. That's in the future.
I think what he's saying is on that old distribution line, there's about three poles in between every two of these poles.
Right. The, most of the distribution is going to stay. We're only going underbuild on a small section.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Stephen. So this is out the Valley of Fire. This is our crew installing a regulator out at the Valley of Fire for the new visitor center that's going to be operational here this next month. And a regulator obviously helps maintain the voltage for our customers, whether we tap it up or down. This helps maintain that so they have a good voltage on their end. The new visitor center, I don't know if you guys have been through the Valley of Fire lately. It's towards the other exit, other entrance, on more on the smoke shop side. But it's a beautiful building. You need to get out there this time of year and look at it. A WEC update. We continue to work with APCO on sending them data that we have, documents that we're putting together, and looking for their review. And we'll be submitting some more to WEC starting this next week. We had a meeting with APCO and NV Energy just last week, and trying to get NV Energy to share some of their modeling, transmission modeling with us. And they decided not to do that. They felt it was in their best interest not to help us in that way. But we haven't given up. We haven't given up. We're using all means to try to get them to cooperate with us and help us use that. It would just, using their modeling information, it just makes it easier for APCO to help us with that. We have, in our meetings with WEC, though, they've let us know that as long as we show progress and that we're working on the requirements that we've been tasked with, they're willing to look at a possible extension next year in July. Personally, I believe that we'll be ready next July to be compliant, but we still have that option if we get some hang-ups to extend that past that date. The Tortoise Ring Bus expansion in the 69 Bay, all the materials are here now, and the contractor will start foundations in October, mid-October, and we should be completed with those two projects up there by February or March of next year. That is my report. If you have any questions.
Randall, when was the 138 from Tortoise to Gila? What's the completion date on that?
March.
March, okay.
March, yeah.
Is there any reason why Rob Power's like holding that back? Like, lost some lawsuit with us and they're not happy about it?
I think it's the way a big organization works. The first thing they tell you is no, right? That's kind of the standard. It's no, we don't want to help. We have plenty of work our own to worry about that helping you. But I don't think it's the final yet. I think that that's just their first response.
That's the easiest answer.
Yeah.
We're not giving up.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Kevin.
Okay, so I kind of want to draw your attention to the picture that's on this first slide. We're getting a new control house for Arrowhead Substation, and this is kind of how it's going to look on the inside. So this is taken from one of our neighbor utilities substations, but all of the equipment is inside the substation instead of being on the outside. So that's kind of the way the layout. It'll have doors with everything behind the breakers and all of the metering, CTs and PTs and everything will be inside the cabinets, inside the building. So we've got the substation, and I don't have a lot to report on because we're just working on projects that I reported on last time. So, but we're still working on relocating the Mesquite or Arrowhead Substation Bay 2 to the Painted Hills where it'll be become Bay 4. So there's a lot of stuff that's got to happen before we can actually move that. We've got to redirect and get power for that load that we're going to lose from that 10 MVA worth of transformer from all other substations. And so it's quite a job to do that, and we're working on that. The reason why that's such a critical thing to get all those that transformer moved is because that's where the transformer currently sits is where the pad for the new transformers has got to go. So we've got to get all that equipment out of there, wreck all the concrete out, and pour all new pads for the two transformers that are coming in. The transformer is scheduled to be delivered February of 2026. So we've got kind of a short window to do that.
Is that first three?
So there'll be two at this location and then one more for Falcon Ridge. And then we also have a fourth one for Taurus Substation, too.
This is the first one?
Yeah. Actually, there'll be three coming at the same time in February. But we already have that pad. It's a Falcon Ridge. The pad's already there. It's already ready to go. So. The Painted Hills Bay 4 project, we hope to have it online before summer 2026 because we've got a lot of load that we need to pick up from that move and get that online. The Arrowhead building contract was awarded to Invent Switchgear out of Fulton, Missouri. That building is scheduled to be delivered January of 2027. So we're on schedule to be hopefully online summer of 2027 for that project, Arrowhead project. That's the third transformer he's talking about is the Falcon Ridge transformer, and we've gone through the plans review with it, and that transformer is scheduled to begin construction now. So, and it's going to drop with the same ones in February of 2026. The Falcon Ridge project is scheduled for completion of summer of 28. So we've pushed that one out a little bit. We're getting the transformer, but everything else is kind of pushed out to 28. We've also been working with ICPE, they're an engineering firm, to do the transformer T5, the Tortoise T5 transformer. And that's the big transformer that matches the one at Tortoise that we have currently, the 200 MVA. We're going to match that other 200 MVA so that we have the capacity we need for the future. Those substation construction drawings we should have by the end of October. It requires pouring a new pad also, so we're going to have to move the transformer that's there to another pad that's sitting out there and build a whole new pad for the new one that's coming in. That transformer is scheduled to be here in October or September of 26. We hope to have that done by January of 27. And just so you know, a typical distribution substation from conception to finish is between 4 and 5 years.
There's certain markers that I look for when I do my analysis over the peak loads for the summers. And just an FYI, the Logandale substation, Whipple substation, is hitting those markers now. So we're in the conceptual stage of another substation out there somewhere in Logandale. So kind of keep that on your radar. It's probably, you'll probably start to see that.
On the Tortoise transformer,
mm-hmm.
ICPE, what's that?
They're an engineering firm out of Salt Lake.
A what?
An engineering firm.
Oh, okay. That's... So it's the company doing the work.
Yeah.
I might just, in parentheses after, say, you know, a company doing the work. Sometimes they go by initials, but it's hard to tell whose work is underway with ICPE. It could be a government agency. It could be anybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll do that. Thank you. So I've got a lineup of our 10 MVA substation. So we've got, you'll notice there's a transformer, a bank of regulators, two banks of free closers. On our 20 MVA subs, we've got a transformer, which is bigger, regulators, which are bigger, and then four recloser banks. So it takes up quite a bit of space. And also the picture on the right is a transformer and the regulator bank. So there's quite a bit of space between there. You're probably wondering why I'm saying that. At Arrowhead Substation, Stephen, would you throw up that PDF for us? So at Arrowhead Substation, you'll notice the layout of the substation. And this is the fence line, and this is the transformer. So because it's a 20 MVA transformer, we have to use breakers in front of it to operate it, to control it, to protect it. The old one had switches and fuses, which didn't take up a lot of space. Well, the transmission side of that substation takes up a lot of space now because of the bigger transformer. So now there's not enough room between the wall for the regulator pad, the reclosers all in line. So that's why we've gone to that internal switch gear inside the building. And also the transformer will have the regulators on the transformer itself. It's called an LTC or load tap changer. And so that will be incorporated into the transformer itself. You want to jump back there, Steve? So that's why we're going to all of this different design of the substation. It's really about a break-even cost as far as the cost-wise go. The building's quite a bit more, but you don't have to buy the equipment out in the field. The regulator LTC is about a wash as far as the regulators go in the field. But they've really come a long ways. And so we worked with Virginia Transformers, who is building the transformers that we're using. It's been a long time since we've done anything with LTCs. And so we wanted to learn a little bit. So we did a Q&A session with Ryan House, a little training with them. They've come a long ways. They've gone from this great big cabinet to these vacuum enclosed switches now that they use in these LTCs. And on the bottom is just this little teeny motor. And it connects with an umbilical cord to this control center that's got all kinds of cool controls and stuff. You can do almost anything you want through that electronics and through your SCADA system. It's all pipe back to our SCADA system. So it's been fun seeing all the advances in LTC technology. That's probably, we'll probably see more of these in the future if this one works out good for us.
Yeah, but it almost looks like each phase is controlled individually, or are they all banked together?
They're still all banked together.
Banked together.
Yeah. But just the options and functionality of it is just steps ahead of what it used to be in the past. You can now have a sensor that will tell you if you got partial discharge coming from your transformer somewhere, and it comes back into the controller and it comes right back into SCADA, and it'll pop up on the screen and all kinds of.
Now, in doing this work, is that going to require the demolition of that Arrowhead warehouse?
Yeah, well. Yeah, we tried to get around it, but there was just no way of getting around it. And finally, we succumbed to saying, yeah, we've got to. So, couldn't squeeze everything in. So,
That's the difference between the LTC, which hangs on the transformer, and the three-phase bank of regulators outside the sub. It just takes up no footprint at all inside the substation for that LTC. And when we're all done, this is a picture of a substation from, it's a utility in Salt Lake is what it is, but you've got your two big transformers, and then it comes into the building, and everything is housed inside the building. These are your takeoff points. One comes in, and four goes out on each transformer. It's really a compact, kind of a neat way of doing things. So for space saving, it's really the way to go. There's a lot of negativity to the metal clad switchgear, but through technology, and they've got a fiber optic sensor inside each chamber that if there's a flash in there, that fiber optic will go back to a relay, which will open up the main breaker just like that and kill everything in there. So the arc flash is pretty mitigated. And then there's a breaker that you rack in and out, and that's where they have a lot of flash problems. You basically take this robot in there, you plug him in, you walk around the corner with your phone, and you pull him out. So you're out of the way, you're almost clear out of the building to rack those breakers in and out. So they've really come a long ways to mitigate that problem there. So we feel fairly safe about using this type of equipment. Any questions? That's my presentation for today.
All right.
Thank you.
Is it my turn, Melissa?
It is, yes.
All right. I'm excited. No, give that to Stephen. I'm excited about this presentation. We're going to switch it up a little bit. I've asked four members of my team to deliver this presentation, which is what I'm really excited to see. But they're going to do my report, and then I've asked them to include a couple of their own slides into it to give a little bit of background, a little bit of what they're working on. So I've asked Stephen to lead us off with cyber. I've asked Merlin to lead us in database and data analytics. Christy's going to handle customer service and public relations. And then Vernon's going to bring up the rear with consumer and government relations. So, Stephen, take it away.
All right. Here's our September report. Starting off with our cybersecurity training for this month, we had 94% completion. Some of the lessons were oversharing personal life events, and you can expose that to social engineering. Social engineering is basically me trying to make you tell me something you really don't want to. So that's that purpose. Humans are the primary attack vector and verify before trusting unsolicited communications. For our internal phishing results, we're at zero. We have some people that are scared of clicking on things. Some of them are in this room. They had to verify with another person that it was okay to click on an email I sent. For our email and spam, we had a little over 33,000 emails sent in and out, and then 4,278 of those were registered spam. Our fire alarm blocks by country, not much has changed, which is usually a good thing. I like to see Germany, Russia, and China to be as low as they are. So these are the new ones. So we at OPD5 currently have multiple layers of protection. You can kind of look at starting at the top. We have a DNS gateway. That basically, when we are browsing on our internet, we go out to a website, it will say this is okay or good, and then we're using an external source to determine which ones are bad and which are good, and also some internal ones where we say, hey, we don't want you looking at guns on our website or company time. Next gen, that's just a fancy word for not quite AI, but is AI. Machine learning, which is basically AI. But that uses also external filtering, so when the company that has our firewall, they're out and about looking around the world, seeing what's bad and what's good. And so we have dynamic firewalls that when something happens it gets updated roughly 30 minutes to every hour, it starts blocking those IPs. So hopefully that means it's constantly updating those, and also to watch for other things going on in the network. The AI network detection response, an NDR, that's a little bit newer. That's provided to us by Meridian. That is my enemy, because whenever I try to scan stuff, it blocks me. And so it does a really good job of watching more what's going on inside here and making sure it's not going where it should. And if it says, hey, you're doing something a little weird, we're blocking you, we're going to stop you for a little bit. Part 3, we have that 24-hour SOC, which is basically when I go to sleep and Merlin go to sleep, there's someone watching our system. They're watching what's going on with this NDR. We have, of course, the next-gen antivirus, basically the same thing as the firewall, same principle, but antivirus is on PCs and computers. Vulnerability scans, that's part of also the NDR. They're kind of packaged on the one, but those are going on also, letting us know on certain devices that maybe need to be patched update, along with other information that we gain from third party and other cyber reports. And then, of course, human firewalls. That is probably the most important one out of all of those. Like we've mentioned before, one click can make our life interesting. So some of these other cybersecurities that are not necessarily physical, we have our external scans. These are a little bit different than our internal pen tests that Scott reported last time. These are, we have actually a lot of governing agencies that are doing this for free for us, and our insurance company, they look at our external IP that all that traffic comes through in here and make sure that there's nothing that they are seeing on that end. A common thing that you would at home, there was a time where people would, you have a camera at your home and people can go in and get to it. That type of stuff we don't want. We do have, of course, pen testing. We do that every year. Annually, we usually switch off between an internal one and an external one, that we get a little more in-depth attack on the external. We have MFA. If we can MFA it, we're going to strive to. And we kind of try to not obviously do things that are going to make things difficult, but this is proving to be a major thing, especially when that clicking thing happens, preventing people that other step to say, hey, is this really happening? Education, me and Merlin and Scott, we go to trainings, to physical trainings, but also learning things through webinars and online. And then physical security. We just recently upgraded our physical security, which is just as important. If I have all these tools and someone can walk in that door and get in my server room, it doesn't do us any good. Or plug a USB in the back of someone's PC. Some of the things that we in the IT team are looking for in the future. We are currently working on separating our operation technology. We refer that as OT, and our information, so everything else that's not part of SCADA, them. We're trying to make sure that is separated so that if something bad really happens on everyone else's side, this will keep on running and we'll be okay. In-house, internal, external. One of the things that I'm going to strive to do is doing those internal pen testings on our own, which will be little other odd things that maybe pen test, well, we would pay them more to do, but we're going to be more recurring. So looking at hacking passwords and seeing what they look like, that people are not using passwords that are as easy as we would like them to be. A geographic backup or store values. Currently, we, for our VMs, we back up to a cloud service and then another device in our warehouse. We would like that to be also another one going across to Mesquite. So if something happens here, we should be able to bring up everything in Mesquite and vice versa. That'll be kind of really interesting, as we talked about NERC for substation that might, we're kind of skeetering on that requirement, but it'd be nice to have in the future. We have cyber training. We've decided that it'd be good to take other people in when we go to these trainings from other departments to go with us. So we're going to start that next year and hopefully get some eye-opening on some of the nerdy things that we do at those places. They might be bored, or they just go home just like shaking their heads. Tabletop exercises. This is becoming also with NERC. Those are going to be requirements that we need to follow so we know that these plans are going to work as best as possible if something bad happens. And then AI discussion and implementation. This will be constantly. We'll just keep turning the wheel on that one and see what we can add, what we don't want to touch, and move on. And that's, now I turn it over to Merlin.
Hey, one question.
Yes?
You know, with the DMV, you know, the trials that they've had, have they just kind of disclosed how they, you know, how they got into their system? You know?
Particularly how?
Yeah, or how they got in through a vendor, through...
So that is a what we call a third party. That is usually from a chain of command. So if, let's say we buy an equipment that's made primarily out of China. There is potential that that device technically could have a backdoor in it that's pumping out through the network. There's a lot of protections from that. We primarily are only like our networking stuff. It's coming through Cisco. It's coming through Dell. Substation equipment is coming through Siem or some common distributor. Most of the time, if not, it's either in the U.S., maybe some of it in Mexico. Very rare is anything coming out from anywhere. Like SolarWinds was one. That was a common one that was built from China. And there are a lot of things that protect that. But it, when you're going against a country, we're trying to protect ourselves from 10,000 of people trying to do stuff. They're just trying to make one good decision, and that's what happened. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, as far as us, we're heavily protecting that. And also that NDR that I talked about, if there's stuff that's going out, it'll attempt to recognize that as best as possible with AI and stuff, and hopefully that it'll catch it and then stop it, and we won't have problems. Any other questions? Okay.
Yeah, where's my documents? No. So there's been a lot of talk about our NERC and WEC requirements, and these are the families of all the standards we're required to provide evidence and documentation for. Under each family is a group of standards, under each standard is a group of requirements, and under those are sub-requirements. When we downloaded all of the things we were responsible for, there were over 1,000 sub-requirements. These are all standards that we have to read and address and provide evidence and documentation for. We want to do things effectively and as cheaply as we can. My first instinct, I went to Randall and asked, what are all the other utilities doing? And Randall's response was, NERC and WEC refused to provide any information on what anyone was doing. And then we had to figure it out on our own. And we went to APCO, our partner on this, and they had some good information. They said it would not, their software would not work for our environment and our application. And so we just created our own. I like using a web browser because it's software that everyone already has. It's easy to control access to, and there's a lot of great tools. It allows data to flow in and out. So I'll just show you briefly. These are some of the standards that are under requirements. These are all the ones that we're required to provide information for. So I can pull up this particular one, personnel and training. These are all the requirements under it. Under these requirements are all the parts that we have to address. So you can see there's a lot of data, and we just needed a way to organize it. So creating the browser in a collapsible and expandable tree made that effective. And then in each requirement,
there's a form for submitting our documentation, for uploading files, and providing evidence for each of the standards that we are meeting. And in the event that we're audited, we can very quickly grab all of our data and provide the evidence that is needed. This is ongoing in building and constructing. The advantage of doing it ourselves is we can customize it to whatever our needs are.
We can pull up the report IQ.
So this is a different report application. If you've heard of Tableau, it's a database reporting tool, and this is part of it. This is recommended by SADC, by Meridian. And so it attaches to our database, and we can pull data and organize it and make information out of raw data. This is probably our most used report. Kevin likes this one. This is a list of all the feeders and all the substations and all the meters attached to them. It's red. The darker the red, the higher the number in megawatt. This is each month, the peak megawatt for each feeder. And the tool is interactive. It's a little different in that it only reads data. We don't put data into it through this window. But it works really quick at processing data. So I go into here into any particular feeder. We'll go into... So each time it does that, it's actually gathering the latest information. It's nearly live. We'll go into the month of August for this particular feeder, and it loads that whole month every day. So this is each day of the month. We can see that these two red boxes were the highest, and then it loads each hour of the day into this column. We can see the heat wave or the energy wave as it gets hot in the day. And select a particular hour and a particular 15 minutes, and then
this is an individual meter.
This is now we've selected one meter, and it's right at the top here. It's Dinosaur T1. And when you select a particular hour and a particular 15-minute interval, it shows at that particular time the rest of the meters on the whole system. So we can see the coincidental, if there's an event, we can see what everything is doing at the moment of that event. I kind of geek out about this. But this is one of our tools. Is that good, Scott? Can we show one more? We're probably done.
A couple more minutes.
I'll show you one more.
I'm reading the room here.
You got so really excited.
Well, that's an interesting.
So, in that second of that hourglass loading, this is another reason I like this software. This is, it loads every daily read from every meter on our system. So, we have about 20,000 customers, and it loads the last 60 days, which is about 1,200,000 data points. In that 3 seconds were just put into this. And it calculates the 60-day moving average of those daily reads. And these two people have reads that move, they are deviations from the 60-day moving average. You could click on one, so this John, so this is the 15th, this was just 2 days ago. And it shows this green line is his average, and this yellow line shows there was a big deviation. So without waiting for his bill to come out, without waiting for the end of the month or whatever it is, within 2 days we can see that there was something, a big change, and maybe a procedure will go into place. Maybe he needs to be contacted. And just like the other ones, it's pretty interactive. You can change the flag of how far those deviations are going and start adding more people onto the list. And we can calculate millions of data points in a split second. Any questions?
Will you contact some of these people if they get a certain deviation?
That's an answer for the meter department, I believe, but I've seen nods.
Well, billing,
I know billing, billing does. We haven't got into not using this yet, does this thing?
I created this for the metering department, but if you want to use it,
I'll let you have it. So they could get a, yeah, we could use that. But yeah, we do contact customers when we notice spikes.
The water company does notify the customer.
Yeah.
You have to
leak.
Yeah. We just got
That includes my water
situation. I have a question.
Yes.
Incredible amount of information you're collecting. Incredible. Bottom line value.
Yes.
How valuable is it?
So we have lots of data that is collected, and then our goal is to make information out of it that is valuable for decision makers, right? To see what direction the company is going. The data can say a lot.
And some of it's required.
Yes.
By the way.
Yeah. So there will be more coming down as those regulations.
Those for our department alone, though, I mean, those deviations, when we start looking at those, it'll save us tons of time in reviewing bills, making sure they're correct.
Well, it just seems incredible amount of data collected, and somehow we survive without huge timeouts. And lots of investment and time and effort to get all this stuff, and you wonder how much better the decisions will be with in true dollar value. Yeah.
The value is all in the analysis, and analysis takes people. Yeah. Now, we're seeing that so much of that information, not this because of much of it is proprietary, but can be dumped into AI, and it notifies you of those deviations. But one of the things that we have said since my taking over is that all decisions will be data-driven decisions. And so that, of course, takes analysis and time. But we no longer make decisions because it feels good. We make decisions because the data tells us that this is the direction we should be going.
Well, then if the data is driving the decision, they do not need us. Seriously, I mean, if you're thinking that the data is driving it, then I guess that's the secret of artificial intelligence, isn't it? You don't need near.
Are you calling us artificially intelligent? Yes.
Yeah,
it
does. Yes.
Sorry.
Thank you,
Merlin. All right. For the customer service measurables this month, we had 38 new customers that signed up for automatic bill pay, which brings our total to 10,545 customers that have enrolled, which is 56.09% of our customer base. New customers on e-bill for the month of August were 88, 54 in July. It seems that anytime we have an issue with the post office, those numbers seem to rise because they want to start receiving their bills earlier and not have to wait for them to come through the post office for this. Total electronic e-bill is now up to 6,615, which is 35% of our customer base. We're not selling that as quickly as we are on the automatic bill pay. Number of calls totaled 1,277 for the month of August. Average on hold time still remains between 7 and 8 seconds. And the average talk time is between 2.5 minutes to 3 minutes across the board usually. Total walk-in customers for August was 1,898. I don't know what drives people to come into the office in July, but you can see that even with last year, we had more customer walk-ins in July. So this is something we don't usually like to talk about, bad debt, liens, and write-offs. These are all accounts that were uncollectible upon their final bill. You can see in 2020 and 2021, the economy must have been bad because we had to have a lot of bad debt during those 2 years. 2020, we were almost $30,000 with bad debt between liens and amounts that we could not collect and also could not lien. There was only around $4,000 that we were able to lien at that time. As the years go on, we write off and we try to collect as long as we can. You can see in 2022, we wrote off a lot of our bad debt. Those were balances we have been carrying since the early 2000s. We were not ever going to collect that money. We've made different strides to keep the bad debt more under control. We make sure that my staff, after billing, bills the final bills and they send it to bad debt, my staff starts collections. We start calling the customers, we start calling the owners, we start calling the landlords, trying to collect that money. In the event that it is over $100 and we can lien it, we do file a lien on that property. That lien stays with the property, and actually the power bill stays with the property. So at some point in time, we try to collect that money. If you look in 2025, the numbers are a lot lower. That is only through July. And I actually looked at the numbers today. As of today, the bad debt has gone down to $6,600. The liens have gone up to $6,880. We have 20 liens at this time that are outstanding that will at some point be paid because someone's going to want to sell that property. Community events. We have several community events coming up. These are all pictures from last year. On October 21st, we have Career Day at Virgin Valley High School. They include Beaver Dam and Moapa Valley High School in that invite, so all three schools will participate and come through. They do all the seniors first, then they start going to the juniors and the lower classmen if they want to participate. So in the next coming weeks, I will be reaching out to some of you managers to send staff with me to go and be at the school. We also have our Veterans Day parades coming up, November 8th in Mesquite, November 11th here in Overton. If you don't want to help drive the truck, we always invite you to come help pass out candy, pass out goodies, or just ride on the trailer with us and show that the Overton Power family is part of the community. We have our Parade of Lights coming up in December. That's fun. It's also a food drive. The cost to be in this parade is to donate food. And so that helps the community. All of that food goes to Salvation Army. And then you can see we had the Mesquite Days Parade. We didn't get to have one last year. There was not enough participation. And then we also participated with our county fair the previous year. All of these events take the entire village. I can't put these events on by myself. I can't drive the trucks. And I can't man all of the pass out toys. So we need help. So if you want to ride down the trailer, hit me up. We also have food drives coming up. These are pictures from last year's food drive. As you can see, Vernon wrote us an article on both food drives in Mesquite and for Overton. The Overton food drive has been really important over the years, and this comes from Penny Pallone at Kapalapa here in Overton. It helps get our pantry well-stocked in time for the holidays, and it keeps us stocked well past that into the next few months of the first of the year. They appreciate that. They ask us to do this. It helps replenish their food banks. We partner with the schools on this, but I'd also like to challenge all of the managers and all of their staff to really think about giving this year so that Overton Power is also not just a partner with the schools, but that we're also providing to these food banks as well. They are always short on hygiene items and actually things to make the actual meals. They get lots of noodles, they don't get the pasta sauce. They get lots of tuna helper, they don't get the tuna. They also will take cash donations. Those do not go out to the recipients for the food bank. Those stay within the food bank and they use that money to buy meat. And so I just challenge all of you to participate this year. And that's my presentation.
All right. Exciting stuff.
So for social media communications, Instagram, in August we had 16 new followers, which is a
woo!
Good trend. Yeah.
Hey.
What do I do?
Down.
All right, good. And then followers and reach in August, we had 584 followers on Instagram. 966 was our reach. That's every time anything we post on Instagram has been viewed, is the reach. Facebook, number of Facebook posts during the month of August was 15. So we try to keep things moving there. Social media outreach for Facebook, we've got 17 new Facebook followers. This is probably our, this is our biggest channel of followers, so 17 is a pretty good number to add to. And as you can see, that the reach on Facebook is much bigger than any of the others, 11,234 with 8,592 last year. So pretty good.
Why does it go like last month it was 7,000, now it's 11,000? Is that just how many people clicked on it, or?
This is how many people saw it. Anyone who saw that post on their feed. So it basically serves it to them. They don't have to click on it. That's a whole different diagnostic, and we'll look at some of that in my piece too. Facebook followers. In August, we're up just a little bit, 4431. For government relations, the portion of communications that I'm in charge of, right? Articles published, we published in the last couple of months, basically during the quarter, 12 different articles. They went out on our website and or in the newspaper. And usually when we put them on our website and sometimes on the newspaper, we actually link it through social media too, so people can see it that way. Social media PR posts, there were 25 of them. Our total audience across all channels is around 4,700. Total average monthly impressions, that's like just who saw them, is 27,000. And this is interesting, that monthly engagement is what you're asking, Bob. That's who clicked on it or maybe commented on it. We're about 10% on engagement, so that's not too bad. 2,700 people, 2,700 engagements. Also, we got our August newsletter out. That's through electronic track channels. That goes to everybody on our email list, and it goes to social media. We've also we do a big post to social media for the whole when the newsletter comes out, and then through the month we take articles in the newsletter and kind of highlight those in social media too to drive people there who might have missed it. And then coming soon, we're going to have a big 90th anniversary celebration. We've got big things planned in the next month or so for that, on all these. Last, dealing with government relations, what we've been up to the last couple of months. We've made pretty regular contact with all of our elected officials, congressional staff, state legislators, county commissioner. Part of that has been we follow all the legislation, especially at the federal level. Some of these that are really important to us and to the NRECA, the FEMA bill, which kind of reorganizes a little bit the FEMA agency and makes it easier to get disaster relief funding. And the SPEED Act, which is a permitting, standardizing permitting for public lands right away. What we've done is written short articles about these and published them on our website, put them out on social media, and that also gives the opportunity to touch back with our legislators at Congress and say, hey, this is really important to us, and it's kind of brought conversation to them, so they know. Grant writing, we finished up, during the summer, we finished up the process on the EGIP grant, and we're just waiting, should hear some news here pretty soon on that through the governor's office of energy. And I've also been busy kind of keeping in regular contact with the Governor's Office of Federal Assistance staff. I've attended some Zoom calls that they have that they bring stakeholders from all over the state together. Some of them are not energy people, some of them are, but looking for opportunities to partner up because that always helps you with grant stuff. And then they also have some training that I've done so that I can track federal funding through their platform, which is pretty good. And I'm always kind of on the lookout. Federal funding is kind of about the same time I started watching it in January is about the time that it sort of dried up from the current administration. So there's slim pickings out there, but there's a little bit here and there. So I'm watching for those things. Any questions?
You mentioned the newsletter.
Yes.
And you put it on the website, and you got 4,000 hits or something. What's that?
I think we can get specifically on who hit the newsletter.
What you're referring to, just gross numbers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when we mailed it out, we got to 18,000. Every single customer got one. Mm-hmm. Now we're down to 4,000 or something smaller, much, much smaller number. Isn't worthwhile even wasting our time doing it now. Because your audience shrunk. We saved a little money, maybe, but the object was to inform all the customers.
But did the audience shrink, or was it always that size?
I don't really know, but I know.
Let's open our bill.
Now it's actual people that are wanting to see the article.
No, instead people of who use the internet and want to see and are just cruising around. Before, whether you were on the internet or not, you got our newsletter. And the idea was to do that. Now, when you send it only to people who are finding it on the internet, they're not necessarily a smaller subset of the 18,000. Or they are a smaller subset of the 18,000. So why don't we start trying that? I mean, seriously, when you think about it, it costs money to do it. And the idea was to reach all the customers with some news of what we're doing. We're not reaching all the customers anymore. We're reaching a real specific small group. Is it worth doing?
How many phone calls
have you had for that information that you used to get it that apparently don't get it now? Have you had a bunch of
that are looking for
that newsletter?
The newsletter.
Have you had a lot of people call looking for it?
We had one lady that asked, and we started printing them and have a copy on our front desk, but that's it.
I understand. We do lots of things and spend lots of money in different kinds of advertising. The question is, it's a basic question, though. If we're going to do it and reach all the customers, or do we just say, okay, we're just putting something on the website, saves a little money, maybe, because if somebody's doing it, physically doing it, you're not paying for the printing cost. But it's something to think about, whether it's any value left. And the idea was we originally decided to do it so we could reach out to all our customers and let them know what the heck was going on and sort of puff piece a little bit. We're no longer doing that. And that's the question. It's just a basic question to think about, something point to ponder. Is it worth it anymore? Because we're no longer reaching our entire customer base.
What do you think, Mr.
Well, I think
kind of a news guy.
I think there's some traffic to it, so the people who are looking for it online can get it. It's also we might be also attracting some people who would have thrown it away by reposting some of those specific articles that are in there. They can come to it. We could certainly pull back from a formal newsletter and put those same points of content onto our channels, I mean, onto our website and that kind of thing. But really, there's not much less. I mean, that content is important stuff. I mean, we're going to have some pretty interesting things in the next 90th anniversary thing that people will be interested in. But it could be delivered in a lot of different ways.
You said 56% go out on e-bill. of the bills go out e-bill? Do they get a copy of the newsletter?
They get e-bill? On e-bill, if they're on e-bill, we have their email. We're sending a notice, a link to it on their e-bill.
That's half of them, over half.
Yeah.
Have the opportunity.
If they want it, they're going to get it.
Richard, are you on e-bill?
No, I'm not.
Oh, let's get there.
You need to turn that, tell him to turn his computer on first, yeah. And then you'll
get.
We do make paper copies available in the lobby, so people can, if they want them, they can come and get them. That's another thing. And I think, you asked what my opinion is. My opinion is that the more you can do, the more touch points you can put out, the better. So whether it's by social media, whether it's by, and again, what I always used to say when I talk to people about marketing in the newspaper business was you do everything you can do that you can afford to do. So the question is whether, you know, what the best way of the funding is.
But you say you touch people, everybody you can possibly get to. We shrunk that way down and just stopped doing that.
So is the suggestion then that maybe we should consider going back to printing it as well?
I think it is a consideration. It's something to think about. Do we want to reach all our customers once in a while? And it was only published four times a year because publishing it every month is a total waste of money. But maybe only once a year. It needs some thinking, not just saying, let's just do this. And I'm sure you guys did some thinking. But you made the statement, you reach people everywhere you can. We're not doing that significantly. Now, was it worth it? That's the decision we have to make. And I'm not saying we have to do it necessarily. I'm just saying, hey, think about this. What we're trying to do with it, and are we doing it? And the answer, reaching 4,000 people, that's not doing it. What we originally had in mind. Was it worth it? I don't know. So,
good point.
Like, you published a paper for free every week, right? Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Anything else?
Thank you, Vernon.
Thank you.
All right, Jonathan, we have finances.
All righty. Welcome. Thank you. If you look at our bottom line here, our capital, or Patronage capital margins, line 29, we had net margins of $935,000 for the month of August. And before we get too excited about this, we'll go through some things here. So line one, our operating revenue, we had just over $6 million. Our line three cost of purchase power, $3.8 million. And then our line 20 total cost of electric service is $5.18 million. And line 22 non-operating margins or interest received on investments, $38,000. So again, our $935,000 margin for the month of August. So for year to date, we're at just under $2.2 million. And again, these numbers here, we still have estimates in here for this month and a couple estimates in the prior month that are affecting that amount. But our budget, what we're looking at for the year to date is 3.4, so we're right around $1.2 million below what we were anticipating from here. So I've done a lot of analysis, talked to Melissa a lot. We're doing a lot of work here trying to figure out where we're going to be for the next 4 months and how this is all going to shake out. The couple things to note. Number one, we're at we're public power, we're a not-for-profit. We're at a $2 million margin year to date. Our energy revenue is, when we did our rate increase, we increased our energy costs, and that is directly driven by usage, number of customers, weather, and we had just this year have not had the kilowatt usage that we've had just from the prior year. So usually every year we anticipate and budget that we have generally 5-year average around a 3% increase. Well, we are we are below that. We're actually, currently, we are below, we're right around 9 million kilowatt hours below where we were this time last year. So not only are we not above what we were last year and where we budgeted, but we're actually not below. So that being said, Lisa and I have been in contact with CFC. We've been working with them to do a revenue requirement study. We met with them over the summer. At the beginning of the summer. We met briefly in the middle of summer, and then we just met with them today. And we are in talks that they're working on data and information for us to see where we need to be with our rates to meet our, going for next year and for the future. So that being said, does anybody have any questions about the margins right here?
A couple questions.
Yeah.
What was the spread last month? Because at 1.2 this month, what was the spread last month?
The year to date?
It's minus the 935, right?
Yeah, but there was also an additional 200,000 in.
Oh yeah.
And the AM charges that weren't on our July that came after, but that's one of the estimates they're working on that. So it's actually.
What was the budget for this month? The actual.
$700,000 is the answer. $700,000.
You did 200,000 better than you planned this month.
Well, 1.7 was the
less budget. $700,000 less than what we planned for margins.
So our net margins were 1.7, so we're at 9, so we're roughly 700.
And that is, we have two factors that we are looking at. First and foremost, it's weather. If you remember last year in September, we were almost peaking. The weather was still so hot for the month of September. And in October, we were still over 110 on two of those days. And this year, I'm driving to work without my air conditioner on in my vehicle in the mornings. And so we're seeing that difference. So when you base your rate increase on variable, which is the energy, and then we don't have the sales, we're not recovering the same amount of revenue that we anticipated. And then, Jonathan, I'll let you speak on that. We also, the other factor.
Yeah, so in addition, we have our largest industrial customer. We had this month is the first month that we've received their actually put solar online on their facility, and August was the first bill month reflected in that. So their usage actually dropped down. It was about 18% in kilowatt hours. So August and September's is a reduction of that much, and so that's. I mean, it's not, you know, a difference maker, but it's impacting.
So there are more. You say it. Go ahead.
We have another large commercial customer who's going to add solar to their facility, and one of the housing developers in Mesquite is starting to put solar on their tract houses.
So for this particular large customer, they're about a 4.5 megawatt load, and they put on about 3 megawatts of solar, just to put it into perspective. And that came on in July. So we have July and August that now we can kind of trend that to see how is that affecting us in that loss of sales. In addition to the fact that we're having a mild weather year. And so both of those play a factor. Now, you assume that when we sell less, we buy less power, and it that is true, but it's not a one-to-one ratio on that. So we do see that our cost of power is less than what we expected, but our revenue is certainly less than what we expected. And in prior years, when we had a $12 million margin, if we had a mild weather year and we brought in $1.5 million less in revenue, it's not as significant. It's not as heart palpitating, but when we've purposely reduced our margins so much, and now you see that that number is far different for us. We're not used to having a $2.1 million margin. So we're still within the $1.5 million of what we budgeted, but do I think that we're going to make our $5 million margin in 2025? I don't.
When our discussions on the rate study, do you include our new forced increase in costs in that? I figured we got about $2 million that we are not budgeted for now, not even spending, but we're going to be forced to start paying $2 million more. Could you give the figure to them also?
For the new transformer?
With the
the $2 million is for what? What do you mean by forced?
$2 million. Well, we're going to borrow money. Our payments are going to go up $500,000.
Okay.
The next year, we're going to borrow another $500,000. That's $1 million. We've got a $350,000 contract.
So you're saying our increase in expenses.
So not budgeting for any equipment or anything like that. It's just fixed costs are going to go up by about $2 million, about 4% of our revenue.
Yes.
So you give that to them too?
Yes.
When you do the study?
When we're doing our revenue requirement, yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is this going to make us fall out of our bandwidth that we're going to check out?
Our bandwidth for sales, it is not.
No, for our purchase from NASCA.
No.
Since we're using
We have not paid a bandwidth charge yet.
It will look like we're going to stay in?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. The other question I have is, I think I saw on my last bill, you only bill for 17 days. Does that affect this at all? Or maybe that was just me?
Well, that's a good question. We'll have to look into that.
No, we didn't. So that's maybe just a typo on that bill, but we'll double check it because, no, we bill on a 30-day cycle.
Mr. Peter, that was your rental property that came out of your name.
Oh. So you must have made a change.
My house bill. So maybe something got triggered wrong. I'll check with us.
Well,
because it was a smaller bill.
We'll double check on you, and we'll catch up with you next time. How about that?
Thank you. Keep it after school.
Okay, keep us going, Jonathan.
Okay, any more questions about the statement of operations?
I think that's all I wanted to go over there. Balance sheet looks strong still. I usually don't report it specifically, but our construction work in progress appears still really high, almost $40 million. Those are jobs that were obviously in progress and not yet closed the plant. I believe that was, I think it was around $1 million when we started the year. But that number is really high, contributes to our, soon those will be closed the plant, which again, that contributes to our net utility plant of $158,578,000. The Line 8 investment and associated organizations, we have our Line 15 cash, temporary investments on Line 18, and our materials and supplies on Line 23 all lead to a net balance sheet total of $189,621,000. Then on our liability side of that 189, we own, with our margins and equities, 129, almost 130 million on line 36. Our long-term debt with CFC is 44.5 million. Our line 48 accounts payable, and then again, our total liabilities and credits is 189 million. For modified debt service coverage, so with estimates through the end of the year, we're at 1.71, our goal is at 1.85, and then there are averages and then our minimums there. So slightly below our goal right now. Again, those will be estimates throughout the end of the year. Equity as a percentage of assets, still above 68%. Times interest earned ratio, this is a year-to-date figure, is at 2.98, and our goal there, 4.13. And our cash out and checking accounts, we had a total ending balance of $4.68 million.
And then our Morton account, just over 9 million. And then our Goldman Sachs, just over 4,000. Then our breakdown of our Morton account by security type and duration there. As of October 31st, OPD has a total of 18,974 customers. We had a reduction of 13 from the prior month. Again, when we see the reductions, we usually have a larger increase the next month, but it's continued growth from month to month. So we will for sure will reach 19,000 customers by the end of this year. Connection fees, we had a total of 32 that paid $32,899 for August. Current billing arrangements for our residential customers, we had a total of 68 customers valued at $16,313, and we had three commercial customers, $1,228. So we see a little bit of reduction there after the majority of the summer months.
This doesn't include like some of the bad debt stuff we were talking about earlier.
No, so this is pre bad debt. So if it goes from
still current,
yeah, it has to go bad from here to go. Roundup program, Virgin Valley, Mojave Valley balances are displayed there. And then the details for our CFC loans, $44,583,000. We have our next principal payment, quarterly payment due at the end of this month at $1.4 million. And speaking of rates, 3.35, the Feds met today and they did their first rate decrease in, I think it was 9 months or so. So they did 25 basis points today. And they're anticipating, analysts are anticipating potentially two more rate increases, one for 1/4% in October.
Don't say that. Don't even put that out there. We're sorry, Lord. We didn't mean it.
We have not. We did receive the board approval to borrow, and we have not done any of those borrowings yet for this year.
Have you looked? Does that affect our borrowing rate? Like I understand sometimes just because the Fed goes down,
yeah,
like mortgage rates don't change.
It happened today, and I didn't pass. We actually have to do a formal request to CFC to get a quote. So
but it's never 1-to-1. They don't ever just drop it the 25 basis point.
Yeah. But I didn't do a formal request today, but I'm going to do it tomorrow. So breakdown of our revenues and our energy use by customer class here, and then we have the, does anybody have any questions about this before we go to the totals at the bottom? So when I was talking about our usage being down, this is this line 11, if you can see our total kilowatt hours sold, our August usage was 50 million kilowatt hours. And from the same period last year, we were at 57, I believe. And so it gives you an idea of where we're at there.
So 7 million kWh less was sold last month than August of 2024.
I'm sorry, year to date. I led you all.
Weather is
302 is year to date. I'm sorry.
So it's not 7 million for the year, it's for the year. So far this year, we've sold 7 million kWh less than we did in 2024.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I got a question for you guys. So we got one customer now that just put on a bunch of solar, one of our big commercials, and now another one's going to do it. But we're still providing the access to this big load. Is that, do we need to address that somehow to change their base rate, their something?
So we've put together a committee, an internal committee, to rework our entire net metering policy. And one of the things that we need to break out is commercial and industrial from the residential. So when that specific customer came to us and asked for solar, that they received their own contract that was brought to the board, we're going to try to make that a more universal for construction, for commercial and industrial, for all of those customers that are moving forward. And then we need to, in our rates, consider doing different tariffs or different rates for those commercial customers that are going to be on solar.
When do you think we'll tackle that?
Well, the committee is working on it right now, so.
The next month or two?
Well, let's not get too crazy. Probably not a month, Bob, but we're working on it. We're working on it. We have a lot going on internally, so but we are working on it.
Fair enough.
Question for you. In July, we sold 340,000 less kilowatts, right? Or less kilowatts in July, but our profit margin was $300,000 more. Our margin. Why is that?
Raise.
Non-electric revenue.
Is that actual margin of money that comes in, or is that your projection of sales? Because our billing is, you know, delayed 2 months, really. I mean, you get August bill, you don't pay it till September, and it stretches out over
September. No, it's the bills that are for that period. The bills that are billed in the month of July are reflected there. Oh, but okay. You're right. It's 2 months of June usage, 2 weeks of June usage, and 2 weeks of July for some cycles, and the entire month for other cycles. So, but it is reflected.
It's
what was billed
very close
for July.
Reflection.
Yes.
Sales. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good.
Yes.
To answer your question, Jack.
Just other settled, though, why we.
The, yeah, not
pretty big difference for us, and pretty big difference in power usage. It's surprising.
Yeah. And then our averages down the bottom monthly cost. Monthly cost is continuing to go down, 7.15 cents monthly revenue. Also goes down 11.46, and then our 2025 average cost per kilowatt is 7.6 cents. And then this was asked, I can't remember if it was asked for me or not, but see, did you put the one now that bring up that slide for me, please? So when and Mr. Henry brought up the increase of our costs with our borrowing. Not a lot of descriptions on this, but I'll tell you what I did here. This is the basically this was our budget for 2025, 5.67 million, and then it was asked if we could do a breakdown of if we borrowed an additional $9 million essentially now, how would that affect our financial statements? So this is before the borrowing, this is after. So it's not going to be that impactful for this year because we'd only have one quarterly payment. We paid the interest expense on one quarter and it'd be $117,000, so it would reduce our margins by that amount. It would increase our, I don't know if you can see that down there, but increase our principal return for our principal payments that we repay by $31,000. So we're already paying, this is what we're generally estimating what we're paying, estimate of what we're paying right now on this year back to CSC. So not much change there, but in 2026, and I just took what our current, and this isn't our budget for 2026, this is kind of what we put out there last year.
Making an estimate?
Yeah. So we were at, based off of our rates and everything, this was going to be our margins for 2026. Interest expense, $1.8 million.
and interest expense would fill up almost a million, and that's with borrowing the nine in current and additional nine, so that's 18 million.
When was you planning on borrowing the additional nine, or when did you factor it in?
We didn't, just as the whole year? As needed. When I factored it in, I actually did it January.
So for the whole year?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sorry.
Borrowing 2026, we're setting a rate that's going to be overlapping. So you have a few months that you don't have to make a payment on it yet, but you're going to have to pay it ultimately.
Correct.
In that year, you start making payments on it.
Yeah. Right. So that's the entire year, it's about a little less than a million increase in interest. We could reduce the margin that much if that's what our margin work was. And then the return on principal, repayment of the principal, it would be, the initial payment would be, or currently, if we didn't borrow anything, around 4.2 million, and then an additional 260,000 in payment, principal payment. So the majority of it at the front end of the loan, obviously, is all on interest, but about $1 million of reduction in our revenue.
If I understand right, that difference number could go down if we don't have to borrow that money till May or June, whatever.
Yeah, this and these amounts, this was us already borrowing now at the higher rate. It's going to go down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And this is borrowing January 1.
Okay. At the same rate.
At the same rate.
So hopefully
the whole amount. Mm-hmm. So that isn't really our plan. I mean, it was kind of hard to figure out. Let's do one a month and whatever. So I just did the worst case scenario. So.
It's good information.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jonathan. The Governor's Office of Energy, we are working hard to maintain a relationship with them. We applied for the IIJA grant through them, and we also, I had Vernon attend a meeting for me that they have received approximately $90 million for home energy assistance grants.
Is that the Warm Springs thing?
No. So we are working with them for the IIJA grant for Warm Springs, but they have an additional $90 million that they've received of federal funds that's been allocated to the state of Nevada that then can be spread over utilities to help facilitate upgrading of homes for energy efficiency. And so they're working right now with the utilities in the state of Nevada to sign a memorandum of understanding on how that process would work. We'll continue to work with them. We have not offered that kind of assistance to our customers in the past, but if there is state allocated funds that are available and we have people in our communities that could use it, I'm going to do everything we can to try to help get them that money. So Vernon and I are working closely with them. It also just helps to build the rapport with the Governor's Office of Energy so that when they receive other funding. They had a call with us for rehabilitating some of the defunct electric car chargers that have been put in across the state. One of our neighboring utilities to the north of us eloquently called them boat anchors because they were put in as a result of they were funded through the Volkswagen
loss.
And so though now many of those charging units are now defunct. They're not used, the companies have gone away. And so in our talking with them, for us in particular, the way that we've handled it in our service territory is that the companies that put in the charger is responsible for them. Overton Power doesn't own that charger. Many of them are not interested in upgrading them, or if you notice, like the ones in Moapa have been replaced with a Tesla charger. And so I said to them, if you have money and we don't want to use it on a rehabbing of a car charger, Can you just give it to us to use for something else? Like, how much do you have? If you have $200,000, I'll give you a way that we can spend it that will be of benefit to our community. And so they're getting used to me. And so now my team is working on coming up with some of those projects to see what could we do, how could we use that money, and again, just to maintain that relationship with the Governor's Office of Energy. The Governor's Office of Energy will be in attendance at our annual meeting in September for NREA. They have not allocated in writing that we have been given the grant funding, but I would ask that all of you come camera ready so that just in case they were to appear at our annual meeting with a large paper check, we would be ready to receive that. So we have been working on WEC. Randall went over a lot of that, and I'm going to in following items, so we won't go over that right now. And then Vernon spoke on the bill tracking that he and I have been working on. We've been in contact with both Senator Cortez Masto and the Congressman Horsford's office, and we're receiving good response from them. We're really working hard for them to understand the things that we're supporting, what they work in our community, how they help in our community, and creating that relationship with them. And they're quick to respond to us now. And so we're working hard on that, and I'm thankful for us to have those building opportunities with them. I've worked with Tenasca on a couple of items. Since the onset of the solar project with Escape, we've been working through the energy imbalance billings that are coming from NV Energy. And NV Energy originally sent us out an imbalance bill for about $200,000. We have requested that they review that, and they have agreed that there was some billing calculations that were done in error, and they will be sending us out an updated billing. And so we've worked closely with Tenasca on the analysis of that, as has all of the customers that have been receiving that solar. And Tenasca also has been working with us on trying to understand and dial in their scheduling better. And so one of the things that they've been interested in is, of our 15 largest customers, which ones are and aren't weather driven, which ones of their usages aren't. And so I've pulled a lot of data with the help of Jonathan's billing team and then reviewed all of that with them. And so Tenasca is very responsive, and they're very easy to work with. I appreciate the relationship that we have with them. And I think that we've done really well for us being on this contract for just over 8 months, and we have stayed in within our bandwidth. They've worked really hard to work with us on that, and they know that that's been very important to me to not pay those fees. I currently represent Region 9 on the NRECA Regulatory Committee. I was nominated by Dixie Escalante, CEO, last year at the annual meeting, and I received the second nomination from Will Hart from Idaho. Utah, their statewide director, reached out to me last week and asked if we would be willing to support Greg Humphreys, who is also serving on that same committee in Region 9, and he's up for re-election this year. Greg is the CFO of Deseret, and I have been friends with Greg for many, many years, and he was a wonderful mentor to me as for my first time being on a national committee like this. And so they asked if we would support his running, and I told him, I volunteered you, Mr. Young, that you would nominate him. So I hope you will.
I'll be glad to nominate thank him you. As long as you give me the information.
I will. So at our regional meeting in Bellevue, so then the state of Nevada would then, under OPD5, Mike would nominate Greg for that role, and then they've already received confirmation from another state that they would second that nomination. And so I appreciate you supporting me, voluntolding you that we're going to nominate Greg for that role.
Thank you for scripting
it. Yes, absolutely. I have received all of the documentation from CFC on our strategic plan. I am working through that, and I hope to give you guys a draft for review in October, and then we can have discussions in our open meeting, and then we would adopt that in November based on any of the feedback that you guys give to me. I have one final story. I want to make my report quick. Everyone in this story is presumed innocent until proven guilty. When we are working on our 138 line, and Randall can speak to this a little bit more in depth if needed, but we're required to have a tortoise monitor at all times when work is happening. And I have seen the little vehicle out beside those big line trucks. It's very noticeable. It's a different color. It's a Subaru. And I didn't know what that car was. So I was visiting with our inspector on the job, and I said, what is that car that I see buzzing up and down the road? You know, I mean, gosh, it just throws dust as it's driving. And he said, oh, that's the tortoise monitor. And so I asked him, like, what do they do in a day? And again, everyone is innocent until proven guilty. And this was a story that was relayed to us by the contractors who were on site. But they sit in their phone and look up, they sit in their car and they look on their phone quite often. But anytime that a vehicle is to move, you are to do a walk around to ensure that no tortoise has been intrigued by the shade that is provided by your vehicle. So this particular monitor was sitting on his phone, and then he started his car and he drove away, and the line crew looked, and or the construction crew looked, and there was a rock underneath his car. And about 2 minutes later, the rock moved. And I said, can you imagine if the monitor had not done a walk around and they got the tortoise kill on the job? So again, this was just a story that was relayed to us, but I thought that was of interest. So. All right, Mr. Chair, we are ready.
Thank you, guys. Our first item of business is recognition of our safety committee. Action to be taken here.
Okay, so tonight in the room we have many of the OPD 5 safety committee members. We're excited to have them tonight to stand and present some exciting progress that they've made with the OPD 5 safety manual. So we'll turn time over to Steve Barlow and his team to stand and present this. Steve Barlow is the safety committee chairperson, and his team will teach about it.
So I'm Steve Barlow. I've been with Overton Power for 20 years now. I'm a lineman, and I've been on the safety committee since the end of 2024.
I'm Omar Vallejo, Virgin Valley area foreman, and I've been with Overton Power a little over 17 years, and I got put on this committee in March.
Luis Gonzalez, lineman in Overton. I've been with OPD for 6 years, and I've been on the safety committee since March of this year.
I'm Joan Kammer. I'm the GIS technician in Skeet. I've been with Overton Power for about 5.5 years, and I've been on the committee since February.
I'm Marianne Merritzog. I have worked for OPD5 for about 5.5 years. I work in the finance department as the work order and accounts receivable clerk. And I've been on the safety committee for about 3 years.
Luke Whitney, engineering, safety engineer. I've been with Overton Power for 20 years and on the committee since March.
Yeah. So one thing we want to do is we want to thank the past safety committee, because they put in a lot of work and a lot of time into this safety manual that we're going to briefly talk about. So we want to mention their names. We have Kyle Levitt was on that safety committee, Kelly Cronkleton, David Everett, Chad Dalton, and Marianne was on that committee as well. And
BD.
And BD Long. Yes, thank you. So the safety manual has been something that's been worked on for years. So.
That, and we previously followed the APPA safety manual, and what better time than our 90th anniversary to put on our own. So
earlier this year, we went to the best practices conference, and there was an article on that. I don't know if any of you saw it, but we just get together with other utilities, and you kind of go over what you see in the industry and things like that. And one of the questions brought was, what utilities have their own safety manual? And there was only one utility that had their own safety manual. All the utilities there said that there was a need to go away from APPA, to incorporate their own practices, and update safety manuals. So this is kind of a big thing. It was interesting. Valley Electric was the one that had it. Another big utility, they weren't willing to share it. They told me they would, and then I haven't seen anything.
I was going to ask you if some of these others wanted to do it, would you share?
I asked Melissa that, and she said that we would be willing to share. I'm glad to hear that we are willing to share.
Very cool.
That's important for the industry that we share that information.
So I'll go ahead and read the scope of our new safety manual. The safety program applies to all OPD 5 employees. No program can anticipate every possible issue that could arise when work is in progress. All OPD 5 employees are expected to be alert and exercise good judgment in instances where issues arise that are not specifically covered by this program. All OPD 5 employees shall also follow OPD 5 policies and procedures. The safety program is designated to achieve the following. Integrate safety into all OPD 5 operations. Provide safe working conditions, proper tools, equipment, and personal protective equipment for all workers. And train OPD 5 employees in a safe work practices, train OPD 5 employees in the safe work practices of their jobs. Meet or exceed all applicable federal, state, and local regulations.
So that's one thing I love about this manual is it's a living document. It's on our iPads. It's on our phones. We have it out in the field. We also have printed copies if needed. But it's just something that, I mean, just this year OSHA has come out and give us a heat awareness that we had to update our manual. And so that's something that right now we can just put that in there. Everyone has access to it. And so we're excited. We're excited to have our own manual and that it, you know, if changes need to be made, we can make them. So we're pretty excited about it. We're excited that Overton Power is such a big, safety is key here. And that's, we love it. So we appreciate all the board members and all the management. So thank you.
And all our employees were sent this out last week, and they will read it, sign it, and hopefully have it all read by the first of the year.
Definitely. Not hopefully, definitely.
We will.
We're going to do it.
You guys, so we got our own manual now, but like when the general population manual gets updates, will you guys still see those to see if you want to incorporate them in our manual?
Yes, that's correct.
That's what's nice about going to best practices events, all the different events we have nationwide, so we can network with those other utilities. Not always do you get fed an email that says, hey, there's a new safety practice that this company is accepted as a new policy. So it's nice to reach out to your network and see what they're changing and grow with them through those connections, those relationships that you made.
That best practices really turned out to be
it's a good one.
Incredible.
It is, absolutely.
So the program also, through the committee, is not just that we have mandates that come from OSHA, like Steve mentioned, the heat one that just was had to be implemented this year, but it's also, like Kyle said, when they go and make connections through best practices or our neighboring utility meetups, like when NV Energy is in our service territory and we're visiting with them, when we hear something cool that's a new safety practice, we bring it back to the committee. If it's something that we want to implement, we change our program. It's our program to change. We own it, and we get to modify it as we see fit. This committee has my heart. I'm so proud of them. So thank you, guys.
Oh, are we looking for a motion to accept this?
We are just bringing them here to show you how amazing they are and say thank you.
Oh, it's not an action item.
No.
Action. Yeah. I see you need to read.
I can't spell it out any clearer.
Yeah, right. Wow, great job, Stephen. That was really good. Yep. I see each one of your members. Excellent.
Who's got the clicker?
It wasn't as good, Rich.
They copied and pasted.
We copied and pasted so much of what you came up with. 100%, yes.
It's easy to grill.
So now are we on to our employee health and life insurance coverage?
We are. You ready for it?
We are so ready.
Okay. Okay, here we go. This one's straightforward. All right, so unfortunately, we have to report on some year-over-year increases in our health insurance. So for 2026, the quote came in at 9% increase for individuals. For family, we have a 9.5% increase. Dental individual went down 2.7%, but families increased by 5%. Vision individual and family both down by 5%. And life is down just a little bit. But the big one here is the medical, and that is an increase. So this right here, this is the action item summary. This is basically what the action item says in bulleted form. So our deductibles are increasing. It's the new minimums for the IRS, and we're going to go to $1,700 for individual, $3,400 for family. So in 2025, OPD-5 is on track to spend $1.336 million on health benefits. In 2026, that'll go to $1.485 million for an increase of $149,165. So if you want to look it over the years, but that is it. The recommendation is to approve the health insurance plan through NRDCA.
So for you guys, the employees, your benefit goes down a little bit because you're
correct.
Paying a higher deductible. But your out-of-pocket is going to be the same?
We're maintaining the same out-of-pocket, yes. The same contribution from the employee, which I believe is at $30 a paycheck, so $60 a month.
That covers everything, $60?
Yeah.
Covers all that.
Yeah, that's not changing for the employee at all. Just the higher deductible, the $3,400.
So they have to spend the higher deductible amount before they get benefits?
Correct.
And Kelly and Scott do work through this. When we receive the notification of what the increased rates are, they go through and analyze the coverage and see is there tweaks that we could make to the coverage to possibly reduce some of it. We have elected to not make changes to the medical coverage. The employees, the only change would be to the employees that their deductible would go up, but we're suggesting that the Overton Power pick up the remaining increase of $149,000.
Okay.
That's
it. Discussion on it? Okay, entertaining a motion for the...
I move we approve the recommendation to pay the... employee health and 149?
Yeah.
I second that.
Okay. That, Chad.
We have a motion and a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? Any nays? Naysayer. Okay, very good. Motion passes. We're looking for item K, possible approval of APCO Class Q membership and letter of agreement. And this is for possible action.
When we received notification from WEC that we received a requirement for compliance, we were in conversations with Lincoln County Power District. They also received those same requirements. And I talked with Dane about how he was going to handle the workload that comes with being both a transmission operator and a transmission owner. And he had mentioned that APCO is a company that he uses for his power supply, and he had reached out to them to see who did they suggest, and they said that they actually offer that service for Metropolitan Department of Water in Southern California. Is that, am I saying that?
Water and Power.
Thank you. They offer the TOP services for that entity, as well as another entity in Arizona, and they offer to do that for Lincoln County. And so I reached out to them to see if they would give us a price on doing that for us. So the TOP part of this process is for the owner, is for the operation of the transmission system. And that requires to have a 24/7, 365 dispatch center, and then all of the other data requirements that go along with that. When I talked with APCO and we received a price from them, they said that that would cost $350,000 for implementation and then $350,000 annually following for those services. If we look at hiring 7 certified, NERC certified operators just for the employee only, annually would cost us approximately $1.3 million. So in looking at this, I also reached out to Tenasca to see if they would offer that service, and they do not offer the TOP service. The WEC undertaking is extensive. When we looked at other entities and what they're paying and what APCO was willing to help us with the TOP, as we met with their team, and we've met with them approximately, oh gosh, I think I've had 5 or 6 calls with them. When we told them that WEC was going to be on site for our initial visit, they sent out 5 members of their team to help facilitate that meeting for us. We had not signed an agreement with them, but they knew that we were going to need help, and their participation in that meeting was absolutely instrumental in us gaining that relationship that we have with WEC. They have also, in addition to that, been helping us with getting all of the documentation and compliance as a transmission owner. They're charging us for the compliance part of the transmission operator, but they just said, you need to be compliant. You need to be SIP compliant, which is your cyber transmission owner and transmission operator, and they have been really, really good to work with. We have 2 attorneys that are on their staff. 1 attorney is completely responsible for all of their compliance, and he's been working very hand-in-hand with Randall and I in that process. So my request to the board today is that we sign an agreement for APCO to actually officially be able to help us with all of these requirements. That is, of course, a $350,000 bill that would start. They would start that billing in October should it be approved tonight. They have already done an immense amount of work, like I said, sent attorneys to act on our behalf and have been working and reviewing these documents for us, and they're also working in conjunction with Lincoln County and have been in conversations with NV Energy. We would have been lost in the conversations with NV Energy if we did not have APCO. One of the things that Randall discussed earlier is this modeling. NV Energy is already modeling as the balancing authority all generation throughout the state. Generation is coming from our system, through our system, into the balancing authority at Reed Gardner, and those models are already being completed. APCO said to NV Energy, would you be willing to share that modeling with us? Because otherwise, we, APCO, has to model the entire southern state from Meade up to us, and NV Energy said we will not. So we are going to continue to have those conversations with NV Energy. We're also going to have conversations with WEC about the fact that this is a major undertaking for APCO to do that modeling that's already being done. But we're going to continue to work on that. I think that it is incredibly important that we have their knowledge and their expertise. This is a major, major undertaking. The report that Merlin showed you, for a transmission owner, there are 260 requirements as a transmission owner that you have, and then you have to have evidence and documentation for that. With the WEC, we will have an audit. We have a 12-month period to become compliant. That will then, at the end of that time, we will have an audit. Then we are guaranteed to have an audit in 2028. Every 3 years, you are audited. And so APCO will serve and give us, and Richard mentioned that he has a family member that is keenly aware of this. They do mock audits and go, and when somebody else is being audited, they sit through that audit to learn. APCO will perform those same mock audits with us. They will help us be in preparation for those audits and ensure that all of our documentation is in place. I know $350,000 is a lot of money, but if we are out of compliance with WEC, the fines are in the millions. And so I think it is vitally important that we have APCO represent us, help us with this, but then also perform those TOP duties. One other piece to the TOP duty is that we do have a secure SCADA room in our Overton office. We would also be required to have the same type of secured room offsite, so that would require the building of a second room that would just be in case this one failed, and so there's a cost associated with that too. I think that $350,000 is a lot of money, but it is a pittance in what it could be should we be out of compliance, and then the cost for us to try to take on those TOP duties.
Could that second building be on the Mesquite side?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, can you talk about the length of the contract? It's like, what, just short of a year? So you're like October 1, 25 through July 31, 26.
So our WEC compliance, we're required to be compliant by July 22nd of 2026. So the reason is it's $350,000 from now through July to get us to compliance, and then every year it will continue to roll. And we will, right now, what I've presented to you is a letter agreement. They had a contract that Byron and I have worked with them on going back and forth, but it is so in-depth and there is so much information that is required that we just don't have yet. We have to have nameplate rating of absolutely everything that is a BES piece of equipment, and we don't have all of that ready to put into a contract. We will have that by July of 2026, and so we will bring you that PSOS contract in that, yes. So we'll this is to get us started.
Yeah. So this will be for this year, and then you'll re-up after that.
Yes.
Okay. Well, they sound like an incredible company to assist us and help.
Yes.
This is all required because of the solar generation.
No. No. It's required because we built the second line from Reed Gardner to Tortoise. On the day that we hotted up the second line, we lost our radial exemption. Now, what happened was the Escape Solar generation came on, and NV Energy had, for their compliance, to acknowledge that, and it, since it flows through our system, they reached out to us and said, you know, you should contact WEC. You're going to need to be in contact with it. We made the decision to contact WEC so that they didn't come to us after the fact. And because we did that, that's one of the reasons that they gave us the temporary approval.
Otherwise, they could have possibly just come in and said, hey,
you're out of compliance.
You're out of compliance. You owe millions of dollars. You have X amount of time to get in compliance, or you've got millions more to pay. So it was better to self-report, get things rolling in advance so that we get this break, this period to get in compliance and not just get caught.
So what I'm asking for tonight, APCO is a co-op. So to become a member of the co-op, we need to sign a letter requesting that we become a member, and there is a $100 fee to do that. And then that would be a Class D member. That's for services only. And then the other is a letter agreement that I showed you guys that just requests that we create this relationship because, like I said, the contract, the PSOS contract, is so in-depth. But I wanted approval from you guys as the board for me to continue this relationship with APCO, and then also for you to approve for me to pay them when they bill me.
$35,000 a month.
Yes.
For 10 months.
For 10 months. And then it will always be $350,000 a year, so that'll be a little bit less each month. But it's condensed now because we're just starting with them.
Is that $35,000 the same number we talked about last week?
$350,000, yes.
Okay. And then between last, like we talked about this quite a bit last month, I remember quite well. Did any big surprises happen between last month and this month? I don't know if you remember that. It's kind of a big ask, but it sounds pretty...
No, everything is the same. I would say the only surprise is when AFCO shared with us they created a spreadsheet for us that showed what is all of the requirements, and then what evidence do you have, what do you need, what comes from APCO, what should come from NB Energy, and what should come from Overton Power. And I printed it on 11 by 17, and it was 67 pages, and the writing is this big. It's just an immense amount of work. That's the surprising part to us, is the immense amount of work. Now, I want to say...
the surprise also is that they've been willing to start working for us and be helping us before we've signed
anything. Yeah, that's amazing.
That is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. I'll make a motion that we approve that we join Apple. And does that commit us to 350?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, is this motion including the 300 to join as well?
Yes.
Okay. Make that motion.
I would second.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for item K for the membership of the APCO. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Okay, pass.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay.
Decisions are helping our budget.
Well, L, review and possible approval of update to the 2025 org chart, possible action.
When WEC was here, one of the requirements that they had is that we are required to show on our org chart and have designated a compliance officer. It cannot be the general manager. The compliance officer has to have direct access to the general manager and also access to the board of trustees to be able to report any compliance issues. So Randall has taken on the compliance officer duties, but we need to show him on the org chart as a compliance officer going directly to the general manager. So that is my first change that I have on the org chart, and that is a requirement of WEC. Tonight we need to approve that. We have a meeting with them on Monday, and I have to report that has been done. The other piece that they feel is that then the board understands the importance of compliance, and you understand that the compliance officer has access to me directly, but also to you guys. I'm to relay that information to you. The second piece of this is, as we've looked through this process and the documentation and the work that needs to be done, we've talked about adding a staff member to the engineering department. One of the things the reason that I think that it is important to do this now and talk with you guys about it now, as opposed to the 2026 budget, is that we are learning as we go. And one of the things that I think is important is that if we're going to bring somebody in and have them help with compliance, that we don't have Randall learn everything that we need to do for compliance and then ask him in a year from now to try to teach somebody else, have them learn as we're learning. And so I'm suggesting that we bring in a person in place in the engineering department that would answer to Randall under engineering services, but they would help with the compliance officer and also system analysis that we need done in the engineering to fill in any gaps of time that they have.
Are these duties so much that Randall will actually have to be replaced in his position, or is he going to do that in addition to his job?
He's so good, he's going to do it all. He's going to do those in addition to, but there will be a lot of work that he can give direction to somebody else. And as we analyze his current staff's workload, there's not another person in the engineering department that can dictate the time to compliance. But the other piece to this is that Randall is nearing retirement. And we have, we know that we will have him here for our first audit and then the second audit, but then the next person needs to be able to take over those audit duties, and it's important that they're here through those processes. And so that's another reason why I want to make sure that we get somebody in.
What kind of salary range are we talking about?
I put 36,000. That is if we hired them on October, if we hired them on October 1st, so it's just for 3 months.
No, I was wondering what the annual salary is going to be.
So it's about $145,000 for us total.
Is that including benefits?
Yes.
So about $150,000.
Yes.
Just like an engineer, what kind of a, it's a pretty good number, what kind of a person is this?
Yes, an engineer. Now,
what's our cost? That's nothing to do with salary.
Yeah. So, it does not require for you to be an engineer to do this position, but it is somebody that has an engineering mindset. But you don't, it doesn't require a stamped engineer to be a compliance officer.
Hey, Melissa, what, is Randall going to get an increase for taking on more responsibilities? Because I think he should.
Oh, thanks, Randy, but yeah, not right now.
I mean, is that coming down the road as this progresses? I mean, if you're going to take on more responsibility, have another individual underneath that, I think that's only fair.
So we should talk about employee salaries in executive session and possibly not in front of them.
Lunch, okay. Lunch next week, Randy.
Just saying.
So for item L, we're seeking possible improvement here. Does someone have a motion for the org chart?
I move we have the amended organization chart showing one additional hire and putting our engineering executive sort of into a position where he reports to the general manager and to the board of directors is needed.
Okay, very good. We have a motion.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, very good. Motion carries. Any public comment?
It's empty over there.
I see a little hand ready to click and get out of there.
I'm still here, but there's nobody in here.
Thank you, Karina.
You can see her in the corner there.
Okay, very good. Any trustee comments?
Yeah, I do have a comment. When you're hiring these non-operating people, it's an overhead cost, sort of a back office cost. And these are the kind we ought to really strongly consider for our basic service charge, because this is an overhead position. And having it tacked onto the rate, it should be paid for separately in a lot of ways, and there's probably a number of positions. So when we consider our rate increase, I certainly think that base service charge increase to pay for these kind of extra positions we're putting in is a wise choice. It may not be too popular with some people, but it should be, because it really makes people pay for what they're getting. And tacking onto the energy charge is kind of unfair to those.
I think the same for the compliance requirements as well.
That's it.
Good. Very good. Any other comments?
I'd just like to say thanks to the safety committee. I know over the years, I think that's I hate electricity. It's kind of funny, but I've been shocked a few times. Don't like it. I just want to say thanks, because I think without this, you know, you don't protect everybody else under you. So just thank you for that.
Yeah,
it's a pretty important business.
Okay, very good. Looking for adjournment. We're going to have a short executive session after a 5-minute restroom break.
Okay.
We need to
let's adjourn this.
I need a motion.
We have to make a motion.
Make a motion. We move to executive session.
No.
Adjourn.
To adjourn.
We got to do the next meeting first.
I thought we
had
joined
the general. We got to approve next meeting, Jack.
Generally go into executive first and adjourn after we come out of executive.
But we got to approve the next meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thank you.
Make a motion to adjourn to approve our next meeting.
I make a motion to approve our next meeting.
I need a second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for our Wednesday, October 15th meeting at the ski. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we got that. Are we good? Are we good?
Now we're ready for a break, Jack.
All right.
Thank you.
Just so you know, Casey's been really quiet.